Welcome back, everybody. This is OmniTalk Retail. I'm Ann Mazinga.
And I'm Chris Walton.
And we're coming to you live from the Vusion Group booth number one at the World Retail Congress. Got to give a big shout out and thanks to the Vusion Group for making all of our coverage of the World Retail Congress here in Paris possible. Now, Chris, we have another guest today.
Yes, we do.
Who is just on stage. We had the pleasure of watching him on stage yesterday. We have Ian Bailey, the Managing Director of Kmart Group Australia. Ian, welcome.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yes. You did such a great job yesterday. We learned so much. Chris and I, back and forth, were just like, what? Can't believe it.
Yeah, we were talking about it before we even got on the air here. But like, let's set the stage for the audience, especially back home in the States where we live. But what is Kmart Group Australia? Like, how many stores is it? What's it comprised of? What do you sell? The whole nine yards.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for coming yesterday and coming to listen. It's always nice when people turn up. I'd say... Well, first thing is we a familiar name, Kmart.
Yes.
Clearly in America, but a different business to the business in the U.S. So we're 100% Australian-owned. And we've sort of been growing up differently from Kmart in the U.S. for many, many, many years.
In what ways?
Well, we've very much now gone down a path of generating our own products. So we are 90% or 85-90% of the products we sell are our own across our 270 large format stores.
270 large format stores.
And then we've got about 55 small format as well.
Okay.
Across Australia and New Zealand.
And what's the average size of a typical store?
5,000 square meters or 50,000 square feet.
50,000 square feet. Okay. Wow. Yeah, and so the interesting part was the own brands, right? The penetration is very high. The other thing I found very fascinating in the discussion too is your time to market. You can place an order in, 28 days and get it received? That's pretty stellar.
Yeah, no, it's something that this is where I think we all learned a lot through COVID, and where we had like long lead times because we had pretty predictable demand, that was okay. But as soon as demand got volatile, we worked out we needed to be more responsive, so that we could adapt to those fast changes that occurred. And so we worked very closely with our suppliers to figure out how we could give them forward orders.
Right.
They effectively produce in advance, and then we place a purchase order and draw down on it.
Wow.
So, but that can only come because we've worked with those suppliers for over a decade.
I was going to say, right.
Because there's a lot of trust involved in that, and they need to know we've got their backs.
Right.
As they take those positions on production.
Well, you've been managing director now for 6 years, is that right?
Yes, well, since 2016.
Since 2016. I imagine you've seen a lot of change in that time. What are some things that come to mind when you think about kind of the evolution of Kmart Group and just the development of different things, you know, kind of during the pandemic and then now post-pandemic?
Yeah, I think there's so many topics, aren't there? I mean, we could almost list them out and it would take us half an hour. I feel like it's such a great learning environment now.
Yeah.
I think anybody in retail has to be constantly figuring out what's coming next.
Yes.
Both from a consumer, from technology, from legislation, geopolitics, you name it, right? It's constantly shifting. And so I think the ability to be nimble and to be agile and constantly learn is like the critical thing these days.
Have you noticed anything about like the stores themselves that have changed or things that you guys have had to evolve, especially being, you know, primarily your own brands that you're selling?
I'd say one of the great surprises has been the return of customers to stores post-COVID.
Right.
Okay.
So I think we all expected there would be this permanent shift towards online.
Yeah.
What we have is we've got this incredible online engagement, which has remained, but a lot of the customers are still choosing to then come in store to complete their purchase as opposed to transact.
Right.
And so that's really got us back into investing in stores. And really, I think the thought process that stores were going to go away has like completely gone.
Yes.
So I think we're all very confident now stores are like the number one in our future. But that integration with digital is like so valuable for that customer connection.
Well, and where have you had to really kind of double down or invest in digital to make that store experience something that customers feel comfortable coming back to and that kind of bridges the online experiences they were having during the pandemic and now?
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah.
Like everywhere.
I know it's a bold statement, but everywhere. Consumers really do want it all.
Yeah.
I know that's a cliche. Mm-hmm. But if you think about their choices these days, they have so many. Because it's not just within our own markets. We've got global retailers, whether they're from China, Europe, or North America, they're all hitting the Australian market.
Yeah, I remember you said that yesterday, right? So you're competing against everybody.
So therefore, you've got to deliver something that's really unique for customers. And so from our design processes all the way through to customer experience, that we're leveraging technology and data to a greater and greater extent so that it can really help our people consistently hit what customers are really looking for.
Right.
So are you looking at the pandemic then, if I read between the lines there, is it kind of like a data gold mine for you then, in terms of like you get all this extra digital engagement, people are back in the stores more than you thought, you can mine that information, use it to understand your customer better day in and day out?
Yeah, I'd say we understand our customers way better now than we ever did. That's
because
for sure.
Of that, yeah.
I think we can get better. We used the pandemic period to actually double down on our technology investment and progress. Mm-hmm. So we sort of figured out it was going to, we didn't know how long it was going to last, but we figured it would be 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And so we knew it was going to be a tough retail environment. So we really just lent into the future in that period. So we actually increased investment in tech.
Anything in particular?
It was, again, product development in particular. Okay, so we something like 3D design.
Okay.
So we now have the majority of our clothing is using 3D. So, and that's taken out like weeks and weeks of development time. And we're generally getting like a 30% higher sell through because basically the product's better.
Wow.
Because they really do enhance the people and the people skills, but it also retains the IP from the past.
Okay.
So it's like the learnings that we have then get actually digitized and retained. Where historically we were reliant upon the people remembering.
Right.
Which some did a really good job, and of course some like me would have probably done a less good job.
Right. So that's great. So and you talked a little bit about that yesterday, and we've alluded to your presentation that Ann and I both saw yesterday too. And tell the audience though, what were some of the main points you wanted to drive home with what you tried to present?
I guess the first one is that we're driven by a customer insight. Mm-hmm. And I think we always want to keep coming back to why do we do what we do and why is it important to the end consumer. And for us, it's this idea that the customer wants it all, which we translate to lowest price without compromise.
Okay.
And compromise is, it should be the latest trend, it should be the right quality, it should be ethically and sustainably sourced. You know, there should be no reason why a customer feels any negative emotion to a product they purchase. And what we find when we get that right is, of course, customers love it.
Right.
Because if you're a customer and you bought something for a third of the price as your buddy, you feel pretty smart in that moment.
Right. It was a sandwich maker, you said yesterday? What was it?
The iron and the toaster.
It was a kettle, a sandwich maker,
or
and a toaster. They equate to about $4.50.
$4.50, right. That's wild.
And it boils water, the kettle.
Right. I bet it does, right? Yeah.
Does its job.
Of course it does.
It's not just
what
it needs
to
do,
right?
It stops, and it keeps doing it. That's
Well, Ian, part of your job as managing director is really to look around the corner, to be able to kind of see things that are up ahead for the business. What are some of those things right now that you're planning for, that you're trying to get your team to rally around, and how do you approach that, or how are you thinking about tackling that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I feel like we're constantly reassessing almost on a daily basis. I think geopolitics has to be on the list at the moment. The world is way more volatile, and that has implications on how consumers feel. It has implications on supply chain and how supply chains operate. So we're very much trying to build more resiliency, which is quite common, I think, in our supply chain.
Yeah.
We still want to hit those lowest price points,
right?
But we want to make sure we can move and adapt based upon what happens in the world. I think from the consumer side of the equation, of course, consumers are now getting used to higher interest rates and inflation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I don't think any of us are expecting that we were going to go back to where we were with zero interest rates. So that's a permanent diminishment of customer spending power.
Right.
So how does that play out over time? Now, in the near term, I think we've seen people dip into savings. Mm-hmm. And we've seen probably some of them dip into credit.
Right.
But it means there has to be a rebalancing to a new normal. Where do they spend their money? Which categories do they go after?
Right.
Do they spend it in retail? Do they spend it on experiences?
Right.
And how does that play into how we support them in their lives?
So it's really a focus again on being nimble and being able to kind of react and respond really quickly. Make sure that your systems are in place to develop quickly. 28-day product, from product concept to completion.
You got it.
Yeah.
Don't fall in love with what we did yesterday, right? Because the world's kind of shifting.
Right. That's a great point. You always got to be looking behind you, make sure somebody's not coming. All right, let's get you out of here on this. I'm curious. I've always wanted to ask, I've wanted to meet you, and I've always wanted to ask you this question. What is one thing about retailing in Australia that's different from the U.S. that maybe U.S. retailers could learn from?
Oh, wait. That's but the U.S. is quite a big country.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? But you're a very special country.
Wow. I think you might have me stumped.
Really?
Yeah, so when I'm sort of going through the process,
yeah,
here,
right?
I'm thinking about California. Well, that's got a lot of Australian similarities. Well, food in New York, right? So different.
Yeah, well, the one thing we were talking about beforehand, because you're a merchant at heart, I can tell. Like, you were saying you particularly take a unique stance with your own brands, right? It's just one brand throughout the whole store,
yeah,
versus, like, say, Target or even Walmart, which is a house of brands, so to speak. Is that anything? I mean, curious. And you said you used to do that and you went the other way. Why was that?
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's, well, again, it comes down to the customer insight. Mm-hmm. And our insight was, you know, for a lot of products, brands don't really matter. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're buying a Gucci bag, it sort of matters.
Right.
But if you're buying a $5 t-shirt,
yeah,
really doesn't matter what you put, yeah, on the.
Or a towel.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah,
one type of towel.
A bowl for your breakfast.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Great one. Yeah, right.
And even a toy for your kid. Right, you want a great toy. You want it to last. You want it to be hopefully a bit of educational, mm-hmm, capability that comes along with it. And so we said, let's simplify our business and let's go to one brand.
Yes.
And the benefits we've had from that have been amazing. Customer awareness, of course, is huge.
Yes.
So we've now got 90% of Australians buy that brand.
Right.
So without any marketing, it's a household name.
I have to ask one more question here.
Go ahead,
too,
yeah.
Because we've started to see retailers like Target, for example, starting to sell their own brands or test selling their own brands with other retailers. Is there anything that you think is important for U.S. retailers who are starting to toy with this idea of taking their brand out of just their stores and bringing it to another market that you would? Any advice that you would have for them as they're thinking about that?
Well, I think we're learning ourselves, but what's on our mind is we need to be bringing something different to the end consumer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to take our product out of Australia and come to the US or come to France where we are now,
yeah,
we've got to land it. It's got to be different to what's here. If it's just another one of the same thing,
right,
then I don't think that's really going to be the winning formula.
Right.
So I think if you've got something unique, if you think you've got something that really translates,
yeah,
which is universal for consumers,
right,
then why not? Go for it.
Right.
And one of your first forays of that you mentioned yesterday was toys, right? Mm-hmm. You're partnering with Fisher-Price, is that right?
That's right, yeah, with Mattel.
Mattel, sorry.
So we're the biggest toy brand in Australia.
Yeah.
So we, and one of the big categories that we got into is wooden toys.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, as a parent, you know, I mean, my kids are a bit old for wooden toys now. They'd probably look at me a bit odd if I gave them one, but they're like 21 and, you know,
right,
21 and 17.
You never know.
But as a parent, you want to buy good, natural things for your kids, mm-hmm, and you want to feel good about what you buy them.
Right.
And I think when you see like things like wooden blocks, it always takes you back to your own childhood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you feel good about it, right, mm-hmm, versus something plastic or something which,
right,
comes with these environmental consequences. Mm-hmm. And so we've had really great success with those products. And it was a skill set which Mattel didn't have. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, why do we need to develop this ourselves?
Right.
We can leverage our relationship with our customers and we can support the development and production.
And back to your point of differentiation.
And
right, that's the reason it
yeah,
exists.
We're both super excited about it,
yeah,
as a new venture for both of us.
That's great advice.
Well, thank you so much, Ian Bailey. We're so pleased that you could join us today. We appreciate you taking the time. Thanks again to the Vusion Group for making all of our World Retail Congress coverage possible. And until our next interview, in no time at all, Chris.
Yeah, no time. No rest for the weary, Ian, at the World Retail Congress. Be careful out there.